Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning in to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer host here with you every Saturday to bring you the news and top stories from the Military Times, your independent news source about your military. And for the first top story of the week, Ukraine can soon build its own Patriots, but it could take years. U.S. President Donald Trump's pledge to give Ukraine a license to build its own Patriot interceptors would grant a manufacturing right the United States currently extends to only a handful of allies. It is one Kiev has eyed since the war began, though it could be years before a homegrown iteration defends a Ukrainian city. Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky detailing the deal on Thursday after he and Trump met at the NATO summit in Turkey earlier in the week, said the two have resolved it as leaders and that Ukraine has been recognized by America as a country that is ready to build the system. Zelensky said, quote, "Thank you for the positive decision regarding the license for the production of Patriots." Noting that Trump repeatedly emphasized that today only two or three countries in the world can produce Patriots because others are not technologically ready. Zelensky has pressed Washington for the interceptors for years as Russia has fired ever more ballistic missiles at Ukrainian cities. Trump's offer to let Kiev produce Patriots could hand it an edge both on the battlefield and in its standing with allies and foes alike, but only on a timeline that will take years and cost billions of dollars. Our groups, our diplomats, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and the Ministry of Defense need to agree on all the other technical matters, Zelensky told journalists on Thursday. The sooner we agree, the sooner we will be able to produce Patriots. The promise moves Ukraine from a war it entered reliant on Western arms toward building the most sought-after air defense weapon of the conflict itself, a milestone for Kiev in a measure of how far Washington has shifted. It also moves Kiev a step closer to defending itself without leaning on allies who have rationed what they send. So far, the nuts and bolts of the deal remain largely undecided from both government officials and industry leaders, and unsigned. The manufacturer has also not been entirely brief. "We have not informed the company of that yet," Trump said of Lockheed Martin, which builds the interceptor, while announcing the agreement. The Patriot's PAC-3 interceptor destroys its target on impact, a hit-to-kill design, and is one of the only weapons able to stop a ballistic missile, making it among the most closely guarded technology the United States exports. A Patriot interceptor brings together an entire ecosystem of weapons, a radar, a command post, along with the launchers and the interceptors themselves. Ukraine is aiming for permission to manufacture the PAC-3 MSE, the newest and the hardest to build. Japan is the only other country that builds Patriots under a U.S. license today. Germany, the Netherlands, and Spain are jointly standing up a European production line, and Berlin is separately negotiating its own license. Washington licenses it sparingly because of fears the tech could end up in enemy hands. That caution has only deepened now. The U.S. fired between 1,060 and 1,430 Patriots in the year's war with Iran at roughly $3.9 million apiece, many more than the hundreds Ukraine received from all of its Western allies over a span of 4 years. Each interceptor takes 24 months to build and 30 for its solid rocket motor, and a single Boeing plant in Huntsville, Alabama makes the seeker for each one, a Foreign Policy Research Institute analysis found. That single plant turned out between 650 and 700 seekers last year, a bottleneck that paces the whole line. Although the Pentagon signed a separate deal in April to triple the key parts production, even the interceptors ordered under an accelerated $4.8 billion contract this year are not expected for delivery until 2030. Defense Minister Mikhailo Fedorov said, "Fewer such missiles are produced worldwide each month than the enemy fires at Ukraine in that same period." Lockheed Martin delivered 620 of its top PAC-3s last year, A January framework with the Pentagon aims to lift that to 2,000 a year by 2030, according to a Foreign Policy Research Institute analysis. And Ukraine has no anti-ballistic system of its own. Yet. Zelensky this week announced Ukraine is pouring resources into a homegrown version, a cheaper, mass-produced answer to the Patriot he calls Freya, F-R-E-Y-A, built around a Ukrainian-made missile and European radars, launchers, and command systems. He plans to present it to partners in France in the coming days, he said Thursday. Russia's ballistic missiles are its deadliest weapon against Ukrainian cities. A mass attack overnight on Sunday killed at least 22 people in Kiev, with all of Russia's 29 ballistic missiles dodging air defenses, Ukraine's Air Force said. More than 16,000 Ukrainian civilians have been killed since Russia's 2022 invasion. The UN Human Rights Office has verified this. Zelensky has called those strikes Russia's only advantage left and named Patriot production his, quote, priority number one. Ukraine is working in different directions at once, he said, pursuing the American license, European financing, and French systems side by side. The French-Italian SAMP-T, a costly system Zelensky called an analog of Patriot, is already arriving under agreements he struck with French President Emmanuel Macron. It is the only other weapon in Ukraine's arsenal built specifically to stop a ballistic missile. Production is very small, queues are very long, involving different countries, Zelensky said of the Patriot and the French systems. The president acknowledged that none of these solutions will end Russia's onslaught of Ukrainian cities overnight, making the development of domestic defense systems Kiev's top priority. Then we will close Ukraine's sky with our own capabilities, he said. And that's all for that article. Up next, Army orders mass shutdown of official social media accounts. The U.S. Army is consolidating its official social media presence, drastically slashing the number of allowable accounts, and ordering commanders to remove newly unauthorized accounts within 30 days, the service announced in a late June memorandum. The directive, signed by Secretary of the Army Dan Driscoll, limits official social media accounts to a set list of higher-level organizations, effectively ending the digital footprints of many subordinate units. In a Wednesday statement, the Army said the move was intended to ensure a clear, unified voice, reduce operational risk, and improve information access for soldiers, families, and the public. The service said the policy does not end documentation at the unit level, and that content will be published through higher-level accounts in official Army platforms. Exceptions to policy may be considered, the memorandum said, if they demonstrate a mission-critical imperative unmet by existing accounts or other means of communication, such as website post, email, or direct engagement. The Army said the policy did not affect soldiers' personal social media accounts. The move follows a broader push across the Defense Department to centralize military communications. Last month, Acting Navy Secretary Hung Cao announced a service-wide communications strategy, arguing that the Navy is in a fight for the narrative against its adversaries. The Pentagon has also sought to impose restrictions on journalists, leading the New York Times to sue over what it described as unconstitutional restrictions on the press. Right up next, Air Force Contingency Wing assists Venezuela in earthquake response aid intake. A U.S. Air Force Contingency Response Wing dispatched to Venezuela to assist authorities following high-magnitude earthquakes that devastated the country almost 2 weeks ago. Airmen in the 621st Contingency Response Wing are supporting Venezuelan authorities with airfield operations to land C-17s that are delivering essential earthquake relief, according to a Wednesday social media post. U.S. Southern Command announced a day after the quakes that the U.S. would be sending C-17 Globemaster transport aircraft alongside C-130 Hercules, the amphibious transport ship USS Fort Lauderdale, and the littoral combat ship USS Billings. On June 24th, two devastating earthquakes hit Venezuela with magnitudes of 7.2 and 7.5 within seconds of each other. The death toll had risen to 3,811 as of Wednesday, and 16,740 people were injured, National Assembly President Jorge Rodriguez said in a statement. 9 Americans are among the dead, State Department spokesperson Tommy Pigott confirmed Tuesday on Fox News. The U.S. has committed around $350 million to the response effort in Venezuela thus far, Pigott said. The 621st Contingency Response Wing deployed a contingency response element from the 321st Contingency Response Squadron to Simon Bolivar International Airport, according to a July 3rd release. The CRE, made up of 110 airmen, are working with local aviation authorities, the Venezuelan Interim Authority, and the U.S. Interagency Response Team to expand the intake of humanitarian aid through air transport, according to the statement. The Contingency Response Airfield Assessment Team was first on the ground to evaluate the airfield's structural integrity and runway load-bearing capacity to verify its ability to have heavy cargo land safely. Then the remaining CRE units arrived to establish airfield operations to support Venezuela's air traffic control, airfield management, and cargo handling. By stepping in to help manage tower and ground operations, the airmen are clearing logistical bottlenecks, the release says. This critical infrastructure support ensures that vital supplies, heavy equipment, and relief personnel reach the front lines of the disaster zone as quickly and safely as possible. The 621st CRW, known as the Devil Raiders, are housed at both Joint Base McGuire-Dix Lakehurst, New Jersey, and Travis Air Force Base, California. The 621st rapidly dispatched to open air bases, coordinate air mobility operations, assist partner nations, and empower joint interoperability. The wing also provided support following an earthquake in Haiti and supported relief efforts following floods in Pakistan, both in 2010. Then in 2017, the wing helped in the aftermath of Hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria across the southern U.S. and the Caribbean. Now for some news concerning veterans. VA claims backlog drops below 70,000 for first time in 6 years. The Department of Veterans Affairs Disability Claims backlog dropped below 70,000 this week for the first time in 6 years, a milestone the VA has not seen since the start of COVID-19 pandemic. VA officials said Monday, the number of backlogged claims, those pending for 125 days or more, has fallen by 74% since President Donald Trump took office on January 20, 2025. They added that currently just 11.6% of all pending claims were older than 125 days, compared with 70% of the 600,000 claims pending more than a decade ago. The VA has invested millions in automated systems, including a program called Automated Decision Support that pulls together information from medical records and other evidence to synthesize information for claims adjudicators to consider when deciding a claim. The department also increased the size of processing staff by more than a third, adding 9,000 claims adjudicators from fiscal year 2022 through the fiscal year of 2024, and reinstated mandatory overtime in May of 2025 to address the situation. According to the VA, the department has decided more than a million claims in fewer than 30 days since January of 2025. The average time a veteran waits now for a claim is roughly 78 days, officials added. This is what putting veterans first looks like, VA Secretary Doug Collins said in a statement. We are incredibly proud of these historic numbers, which means faster decisions, better service, and more benefits for the men and women who have worn the uniform. VA officials did not answer specific questions regarding the approval rate for the backlogged claims, but VA Press Secretary Quinn Slavin said from October 1st through June 1st, the total approval rate for compensation and pension benefits was 60%, in line with the last 10 years. According to Slavin, the top five conditions that received approval for initial filings were tinnitus, paralysis of the sciatic nerve, limitation of knee flexion, lumbosacral or cervical strain, and migraine. The VA's claims backlog reached a record high of more than 611,000 in 2013, but was drawn down to roughly 70,000 by September of 2015, the result of improvements in processing systems, increased use of digital medical records, and hiring. From then until early 2020, the claims backlog hovered at roughly 60,000 cases. VA officials said at the time that the 60,000 figure was likely the lowest the department could reach given the number of complex claims filed that need special attention to consider. In early 2020, at the start of COVID-19 pandemic, the backlog began to climb as a result of the closure of many VA processing centers, reaching 200,000 cases by the end of the year. Following passage of the PACT Act, the landmark legislation that provided expanded benefits for veterans exposed to environmental pollutants while serving overseas, the number of claims filed skyrocketed. With the increase came a rise in the backlog, which peaked at 410,000 cases in 2023. All right, in other news from the pay and benefits section, retired Army officer tapped to lead military commissary system. A retired U.S. Army officer will take the helm of the Defense Commissary Agency in its 235 military discount grocery stores worldwide on September 18th. William G. Bill Fitzhugh, who has served as the agency's deputy director since June of 29th, will transition to the new position when the current director, John E. Hall, retires. Most recently, Fitzhugh served as acting principal deputy for the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manpower and Reserve Affairs, where he was instrumental in advancing the commissary supply chain transformation, officials said. He has held various leadership positions at the Defense Department and the Department of Veterans Affairs. Anthony J. Tata, Under Secretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness, said in a July 1st announcement that Bill Fitzhugh is the right executive to continue transforming DECA, finding ways to better serve our military community and protect valuable commissary benefits for the next generation. The Defense Commissary Agency operates 235 stores worldwide with a congressional mandate to save eligible customers in the military community at least 25% on groceries compared to civilian stores outside the gate. Its annual budget is about $1.5 billion. I am honored to lead DECA at a pivotal time, Fitzhugh said in a statement. I thank John for his leadership in transforming the agency's business practices so that we can offer a competitive and attractive shopping experience to our patrons. As director, I look forward to continuing the positive momentum he built and contributing to the readiness of the force. Hall became director of the commissary agency in June of 2023 and is credited with a number of improvements, including increasing the availability of grocery stock to hard-to-reach locations. He modernized the shopping experience for customers by expanding the click-to-go curbside program and the doorstep delivery programs. He has also led a pilot program granting commissary access to DoD civilians in certain locations. Hall praised the dedication of the commissary agency's workforce, their unwavering commitment to the eligible patrons, military families, and service members they support is truly inspiring, he said in the announcement of the transition. In 2025, Fitzhugh served as acting Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manpower and Reserve Affairs. Since 2021, he has held various executive roles in that office, which oversees a large portfolio of programs ranging from the commissaries to Department of Defense education activity to military and civilian personnel policies, total force planning and requirements, military community and family policy, and reserve integration. Fitzhugh entered the Army in 1988 and retired after 23 years. Over the years, the commissary agency has been led by a mix of military retirees or civilians with backgrounds in DoD leadership. Up next is another top story: how veterans groups came to clash over a sweeping VA benefits bill. Veterans organizations are deeply divided over the Taking Care of America's Veterans Act, as Congress proposes paying for parts of the legislation with projected savings from a long-pending Department of Veterans Affairs disability ratings rule. At the center of the debate are proposed changes affecting conditions such as sleep apnea and tinnitus, a funding mechanism that supporters and critics interpret very differently, and competing versions of the Major Richard Starr Act. The legislation would combine roughly 60 veterans' bills into a single package affecting veterans, surviving families, caregivers, and medically retired service members. It includes caregiver reforms, survivor benefits, mental health initiatives, community care improvements, and the original 2023 version of the long-sought Major Richard Starr Act. Nearly every major veteran service organization supports those priorities. Their disagreement, meanwhile, stems from how Congress proposes to pay for them. This fight did not develop overnight. Instead, it began at the convergence of three separate efforts: the VA's years-long modernization of its disability rating schedule, Congress's search for an offset to finance a large veterans package, and different conclusions about whether projected savings from a pending rule-making change should remain available for veterans programs. The result is one of the most significant policy disagreements among major veterans organizations in recent years. Modernization effort years in the making. Long before veterans organizations began publicly battling over the omnibus, VA was already working through a comprehensive overhaul of the Veterans Affairs Schedule for Rating Disabilities, the regulations used to evaluate service-connected disabilities and determine monthly compensation. The modernization effort began after the Government Accountability Office designated VA's disability compensation program as high risk because portions of the rating schedule had not kept pace with advances in medicine and clinical practice. In 2009, the VA began systematically reviewing all 15 body systems. The proposed revisions, published in April of 2022, represented the latest phase of that effort, including changes affecting mental health, respiratory, and auditory conditions, among them sleep apnea and tinnitus. Public comments closed years ago, but the remaining rulemakings were still moving through the regulatory process when the VA appeared before Congress at the beginning of this year. During a January 14th hearing before the House Veterans Affairs Subcommittee on Disability Assistance and Memorial Affairs, Nina Tan, executive director of the VA's Compensation Service, testified that the department anticipated publishing the remaining four body systems in the three final rulemakings around the summer of 2026, followed by implementation and an effective date. In prepared testimony submitted to the committee, she wrote that the VA expected to complete the remaining rulemakings by the end of the fiscal 2026 year, concluding what she described as the first holistic modernization of the rating schedule since 1945. Those statements became part of the factual backdrop as lawmakers worked to assemble one of the largest veterans legislative package in years. Finding the money. The Taking Care of America's Veterans Act did not begin as a single proposal. Instead, lawmakers combined dozens of bipartisan measures that had already advanced independently through Congress. Together, they would expand or improve programs affecting caregivers, survivors, veterans' health care, military retirement, and disability compensation. Like most large authorization bills, expanding benefits required lawmakers to identify spending reductions elsewhere. Supporters of the legislation pointed to the VA's pending disability rating revisions. Candace Wheeler, National Legislative Director for the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors, said TAPS understood from conversations with the VA and the department's January congressional testimony that the remaining rulemaking was expected to proceed during the fiscal 2026 year. According to Wheeler, TAPS views the projected savings differently than critics of the legislation. Rather than reducing existing disability compensation, Wheeler said Congress is attempting to retain projected federal savings associated with a rule VA had already proposed and testified it expected to complete. Otherwise, she said, those savings would leave veterans programs altogether. She described it as the right color of money. Wheeler also acknowledged why many organizations remain uncomfortable with the proposal. We understand organizations and people that are concerned about taking from veterans to pay for veterans, she said. We have long said the same thing, but in this particular legislation, it is because of a rule that was already put forward. That distinction helps explain why TAPS, the Military Officers Association of America, the Elizabeth Dole Foundation, and several other organizations endorse the omnibus despite opposing similar funding approaches in other circumstances. Coming to a different conclusion. Disabled American veterans and veterans of foreign wars have not opposed most of the legislation itself. Instead, both organizations argue Congress should identify another way to finance the package rather than rely on projected savings associated with disability compensation changes. Their position reflects a broader philosophy about the purpose of VA disability compensation. In testimony submitted to Congress earlier this year, The DAV argued disability compensation recognizes the lasting functional loss associated with service-connected injuries and illnesses and does not serve only as wage replacement for unemployable veterans. The organization described the disability compensation framework as fundamentally sound and cautioned against proposals that could weaken its underlying purpose. The VFW's January testimony addressed the modernization effort from a different perspective, but acknowledged that the remaining respiratory, auditory, and mental health revisions were still progressing through rulemaking. Their statements showed that the organizations broadly understood the modernization effort was continuing while reaching different conclusions about whether Congress should treat projected savings from that unfinished process as available to finance new veterans legislation. The dispute goes public. The philosophical divide soon moved beyond policy papers and congressional testimony. Veterans of Foreign Wars launched a public campaign urging veterans to contact lawmakers and oppose the funding provision. Disabled American veterans issued statements arguing Congress should remove the offset and finance the legislation another way. Both organizations emphasized that they supported many of the bill's underlying provisions, but opposed using projected disability compensation savings to pay for them. To conclude this article, Congress has not yet decided whether to advance the legislation in its current form. The VA has not finalized the 2022 disability ratings proposal, nor has it been withdrawn. Until both questions are resolved, the debate that has divided the veterans community is likely to continue. In written testimony submitted for the January 14th hearing, the VFW stated that disability compensation exists because America made a promise and they should honor that contract. Several proposed changes have been delayed multiple times, the VFW wrote, leaving veterans and stakeholders uncertain about timing and the potential effects of the proposed changes. With the VSO supportive of TCAVA, understanding that these rulemaking changes to the VA disability will be final by October 1st, Candace Wheeler cautioned, quote, that money will go back to the Treasury if it isn't used. And with that, that is all the time we have. Thank you once again for tuning into Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your host signing out.